So, anyway, this is what we need to talk about workload. And what I'm going to try and do is, I mean, seriously, talk about workload. And I know this is on film, but I'm just going to be absolutely honest with you. I think the current conversations we're having around workload are patronising. And that's why the original title for the session was Ending the Culture of Patronisation. Because what we get is we get these comments about we really need to reduce workload. So here's another 100 benchmarks that you can add to all the other stuff you're trying to keep in your head. And we say, you know, we say quite pious things about workload. And actually, the reason why it's serious is that we're dealing with, I think, a kind of perfect storm in Scotland at the moment. Because you've got all of this stuff going on. You know, we're saying that raising attainment's the only priority. Closing the equity gap's the only priority. Well, what about that stuff? You know, what about all of that stuff? If you go into primary schools, and many of you probably work in primary schools, loads of people are finding the 1+2 absolutely the most challenging thing they're having to do with just now, because they're not French speakers or they're not German speakers, and yet they're expected to be doing 2 additional languages on top of English and literacy. You know, huge sets of issues around that. So you've got all of that stuff going on. And just to demonstrate the point, how many people in the room have actually looked at the creative learning plan? How many people knew there was one? And there's a serious issue there, isn't there? That, you know, we've got all this stuff going on, we've only got one priority, but actually that's what you're dealing with. And you've also got this situation as well, that you might have to do it in Scots, you know, or possibly in Gaelic, which will make everything much more challenging for you. And you're going to have to do it with budget slash. Now, one of the interesting things that Graham talked about this morning, the volume of money in schools through the Pupil Equity Fund is enormous. It's absolutely enormous. I was in a small primary school on Wednesday this week. They've got £6,000 in a really affluent village in Kinrossshire. They've got £6,000 and they will find things to do with it, but it's actually quite difficult for them to find things to do, because they're a good school. They've been improving, they've been having an impact on their youngsters. Actually, they don't need money so much as they need space, you know, just to have the space to do the things that they want to do and take it forward. And the worry is that this money's here for 4 years, but it's not embedded into people's budgets. So you're actually concerned about, schools will be concerned about taking staff on because of the contractual issues. I mean, that's if you could recruit them. Do you know, I mean, giving schools in the northeast of Scotland money, the only thing they could seriously do to raise attainment is actually to buy houses. Because folk can't go and live there because property's too expensive. You know, these are some of the kind of realities that we're dealing with. And I think we need to be sensible about that. And supply staff rear its teeth in a hen, and the expectation is that workload will be decreased. You know, and I think it's interesting, and people I think are still worried about the possibility of pendulum swings, because one of the things again that's happening just now is that education has become a political issue again. It's, you know, for years we've had a period of stability where the line from every political party was, yes, we all fully support curriculum for excellence, it's all fine. And then suddenly we're now into, it's become a political background. So people are worried that policy will change and adapt. And I think there's a risk of that. And there's what I think, how I think schools have changed over the last few years. There's how schools used to be. They were pretty straightforward organisations and institutions. The head teacher was pretty much in control. They moved in a single direction. The remit of the senior leadership team was quite clearly specified, I think, without any difficulty at all. That's what I think schools are like now, right? That absolutely everything's your priority, isn't it? Do you know that you're supposed to defeat terrorism through British values? And in England, they've got this thing called the Prevent Agenda. And frankly, ISIS are absolutely quaking. You know, they're no worried about the Iraqi tanks, the Russian jets, all of that stuff. Mere bagatelle, but the Prevent Agenda, they are seriously bricking it about that. And, yeah.
Can I just say, I've just come out of a PGC course and we had a whole morning learning about prevent.
Did you?
And I actually just sat there, and at the end of it, this police woman stood up and said, "Is anyone got any questions?" And they absolutely ran through it. They absolutely rinsed that woman.
Good for you.
At the end of it.
That's the kind of aggressive stuff. that's getting aggressive hostility. I think we need more of. That's what you were really asking for earlier on in the session, right? And that, but you, do you know what I mean? And you're supposed to be ending the tide of drugs, you know, health and well-being. You're supposed to make children faster. You'll have had trouble doing that because you'll have run the Daily Mile first thing in the morning. You'll have had all of that stuff going on, and you know, clearly, I switched on the telly one morning, and there was a woman on saying schools need to do more to teach fertility. Which came as a right shock to me, because I've been trying to prevent teenage pregnancy for the previous 4 decades. And you suddenly start to worry about what's going on here, because the other thing obviously is that it's part of your responsibility to make sure that Team GB do even better in the next Olympics than we did in the last one, so we're encouraging sport and competitiveness and all of that. And frankly, most schools are a disgrace. There are very few offering dressage, and that's a real honeypot for medals. I mean, there really clearly are not enough schools with boating lakes doing single sculling. I mean, there's real medal potential there. And we're still faffing about, you know, doing netball and athletics and that kind of stuff. And of course, there's nobody left to clear up the crap. So you've got all of that stuff going on. And if everyone's a priority for you, what's the real priority? Nothing. Exactly. That's my point. And I hope the music will come on now. It's not. I don't know why this is happening. Somebody has badly betrayed me. Let me see if, let me see if there's something I can do. Volume up, audio mute. Why do you unmute? Anyway, okay. What you should be getting right now is you should be getting Elvis Costello, I Can't Stand Up for Falling Down, which I think should be the anthem for teachers, really. You know, and that's how I think things are. Being a head teacher now is like being pet to death by hens. Everybody can have a wee go at you. You're accountable for everything, aren't you? Being a head teacher, being a teacher is like being pet to death by even more hens, because you've even got the head teachers in your back. And this, does this reflect your experience? If it's not coming down on you from above, it's coming up at you from below. If any of the guys in the room are unsure about what a douche is, I'll put you through that later. But does it feel a bit like that?
Yeah.
And actually, what dominates your life is that. It's the tyranny of the immediate. Mm-hmm. And obviously, people don't necessarily have any idea what I mean by that. My favourite way of explaining it is the last full-time job I had in schools, I was a deputy. When I was a deputy, every Sunday, religiously, I would sit down, I would write out my to-do list for the week. There would be like 30, 29, whatever, huge list of to-do things for the week. And I'd go in a Monday, and I was younger then, and my skin didn't look like a relief mat with the cairngorms, and I'd brown hair and everything, and I was full of energy. I'd work my way through the week. I'd get to Friday, in a spirit of optimism, I would get out my to-do list, and I would sharpen my pencil, because like most teachers, I'm infatuated with stationery, and I would prepare to tick off all the many things on my to-do list that I'd actually done. And sometimes I would do really well and get as many as 5. And I got so depressed that I started to write on new things at the bottom of the list that I had actually done during the week, just sort of something to tick off. Because I never wrote on a Sunday, head injury in the playground. You know, I never wrote primary 3 boys, block toilets. None of that stuff. And yet that was the stuff that occupied my week. I mean, just let me just ask you a couple of questions. How many people in this room have been ill during their holidays? Yeah, because you know what you're like. You know what you're like. You're like this. You're like this. I need to get to Christmas. I need to get to Christmas. I need to get to Easter. It's like you're Jesus. I need to get to Easter. You try to hit every major religious festival. And then you get to Christmas or Easter or half term or whatever it is, and suddenly you go, oh, and the germs will go, right, got you now.
Yeah.
You know, and what that is an indication of is that lots of people in the profession are actually redlining. You know, that you're actually working an edge, and then you get ill as soon as you relax. So we've got all of that stuff to deal with. And I think there are a few things, if we're serious about workload, that we're going to have to face up to. And the first is this idea about raising attainment and closing the gap. Now, I thought Graham's presentation this morning was really good, clear, constructive and helpful. But there is a real worry. Every time we have had an initiative previously to raise attainment, it has tended to widen the gap rather than narrow it. That's been the reality of our experience. When we brought in techniques, what's tended to happen is that good schools that are already doing well, adopt them. And they make more of them than schools which were struggling before they started. So it's actually quite difficult to raise attainment and close the gap. I mean, as Graham was suggesting this morning, actually the most straightforward way to close the gap is to depress attainment amongst your most able and successful kids. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to close the gap. It's the easiest way to close the gap. It's actually much more challenging to do both these things together. So there's a real contradiction there that we need to talk about. And it's really, it was interesting listening to Graham this morning, I think, and we need much more clarity from Graham about what the expectation is in terms of the approach that we take to these children. Because there was no point this morning where he said, what will raise attainment? You with me? You know, my suggestion this afternoon, that the three areas where there's headroom to raise attainment, one of them, disengaged, disenfranchised young people, the people on the other side of the gap, and what they need is not jolly phonics. You know, jolly phonics will help them, for sure. Depressed phonics, probably not so much. But jolly phonics might do something and help them, but it won't give them meaning, and it won't give them a map of their future, and it won't give them a vision of where they can go and where they can get to. I'm sorry, just slightly irrelevant.
So, the time scale is too short.
Yeah.
It's a longer generation or something.
Well, I think we need to think around that. But you know, let me just give you a really interesting example. I was working in Kibble, biggest residential school in Scotland, and they'd asked me to take a group of kids. And I said to them, how many kids will be in the group? And they said, 40. And I said, really, how long will I have them for? They said, an hour. I've never had to take a laxative from that moment to this. I mean, absolutely. And I said, what do you want me to achieve with them while I've got them? And they said, just inspire them to engage with education. I thought, well, that'll be a breeze. And I went in, and one of the things that I was saying to them is, I said to them, people think you're mental, eh? And they were all like, yeah, well, we are mental. We are totally mental. And I said, no, you're not. I said, because what happens with you is, when you have less words than the teacher, if you don't have any words and the teacher's got loads, when you don't have an argument and they do, you reduce the conversation to rubble. Because you can cope with chaos and we can't. And I said, you're not actually acting out, you're not actually going mental, you're taking control in the way that you know you can take control. And this big guy at the back of the room went, how long have you known? And there's something again really interesting about that, because what that demonstrates is how young people embrace failure rather than have you fail them. Chris didn't wait for you to fail him, or he didn't wait for his teachers to fail him. He failed himself. And one of the things that we need to do around raising attainment, if we're serious about it, is we need to stop children failing themselves. And that's, as Chris said, about broadening experience, about creating opportunities, about giving them a range of things which lift their heads. I mean, I've been working in St Francis and Craig Miller in the autumn this year, and I took them in, I took the class, two classes I was working with, I took them into the National Gallery in Edinburgh. And when we got off the bus, I said to this wee lassie, I said, have you ever been to the gallery? She said, no, I've never even been to Edinburgh. And I said, do you live in Edinburgh? She went, no, this Edinburgh. And there's something, you know, that we need to be absolutely mindful about that around raising attainment, because the danger is that we are forced to try and do both, that we're forced to both have this rigorous application of phonics and progression and all of these structures and strategies, and offer the broader experience and care, and it will become untenable. So we need some discussion around that. And this idea about reducing workload and raising attainment, how does that work? You know, I think that's just interesting. This bit about we need to modernise education. And I would suspect that lots of you who are here at this conference are completely committed to a modern view of education, that young people need to become creative thinkers, they need to become innovators, they need to be adaptable, they need all of these 21st century skills, however we describe them and cope them. And yet the reality is that the standards we're talking about raising are existing standards previously measured. And what that means is we will continually come back to progress in literacy, numeracy, national examinations and hires. And what that'll do is it'll actually narrow the focus. And no matter how much Graham tells us differently about the importance of health and well-being will be the casualty of that. Mm-hmm. Because people will say, I will not be safe unless I meet the standards that have been set. So we need to get some genuine clarity around that. And what I think we need, oddly enough, what I think we need in order to address some of the workload issues is to start getting some standards. You know, that thing that Graham showed us this morning, that piece of research around standards for engagement, we actually need to get that into the system, and we need to get publicity for that. We need to get people to recognise that that seemed to be important. Parents need to be engaged in that discussion around that, because, you know, as far as I'm aware, parents will opt for successful schools academically with a reputation for progress rather than schools with a reputation for care. You know, that's the reality of parental choice. You know, folk will sell their young to get into North Berwick High School in East Lothian. I mean, the only way we were able to raise attainment in the neighbouring schools was we capped North Berwick. And suddenly attainment in the other schools began to improve, particularly in Preston Lodge, which I think is now an outstanding school in many, many respects. But it's that idea, isn't it, that unless we engage people in that discussion around standards, we are always going to create a workload issue for ourselves, because we will be trying to fit the things that we believe in and the things that we want to do in the time that's left over once we feel secure in terms of the standards by which we'll be measured. And so I think there's some responsibility. I'm going to come back to what we can do in a minute, if you bear with me. I think this idea as well that, you know, we're having a review of governance, because I know that that's really what keeps all of you guys awake at night. You know, I know that you're all sitting here saying, you know, when are they going to talk about governance? I know it's absolutely uppermost in your mind. I know Chris was just saying to me, you know, I think it would have made all the difference for me if they changed the governance arrangements for Western Hills. I think that would really have cracked it for me. And yet, what will happen with that is you're going to have this disruptive process where you're not going to know who you're working for, where the structures around the local authorities will be dismantled. You'll probably have a bunch of attainment advisors fleeing about, you know, doing whatever attainment advisors do, and then you'll have to buy in some of the support that you would previously have got from your local authority people. It'll cause significant disruption. Now, whether it's a good idea and whether autonomy will generate, but what I'm seeing in England is people are now reinventing structures. So instead of working for a local authority, you work for a multi-academy trust. And the reality is that there are good multi-academy trusts, there are not so good multi-academy trusts, just like local authorities. So, you know, there's some issues, I think, around this, because I think that where we need to go is to maintain your stability and confidence. I think you need to feel secure in your job and your role. You need to have an understanding of where you get support, all of that. I think all of that helps. The point there about flexibility and parameters, I mean, that for me, that was one of the worrying things in Graham's presentation, and I'm going to try and talk to him about it as well. Because half the time he was saying, do what you like, but don't do that. Do what you like, but make sure you do that. There was a lot of that there were parameters within which you had to work, and yet what you were being told is you had flexibility. Now, that's what happened with Curriculum for Excellence. At the beginning with Curriculum for Excellence, people had that flexibility. You know, you had your four, whatever you call them, forgotten now. Anyway, you had four things, which is great. It's a bit of pleasure. I can remember the number, I can't remember what they were called. Capacities. You had the four capacities, and you had a washing machine diagram that told you everything you needed to know about Curriculum for Excellence. And folk were going, I'm insecure with this. I'm insecure with this. I don't know if I'll get it right on the basis of this level of information. Give me more. And then people gave them more, and then they're going, no, it's too much. I didn't want all these experiences and outcomes. 18,000 experiences and outcomes, too much, can't fit them into my brain. And it's that tension around all the time. So I think we need real clarity if we're going to address the workload issue around what it is that we are expected to do, what's acceptable, what's not. And for me, there needs to be a better balance between flexibility and parameters. And then this bit about the bottom, you know, we talk about clarity and then lurch into platitudes. So, you know, I mean, I'm apologies for this, but I'm obsessed with this thing about, you know, closing the gap is shorthand for all of the efforts we make to interrupt the cycle of deprivation. What the flip does that mean? Does anybody know what that means? Interrupt the cycle of deprivation. What does that mean? But we're going to stop it for a wee while, and then, as I said earlier, normal service will be resumed as soon as possible. Right? It's not helpful. It's a platitude. What we need to be saying is, and what Graham did this morning actually brilliantly, was he said, actually it's about trying to make sure that the results that children get do not absolutely reflect their postcode. You know, and even if that was clearly said, that what we're looking to see is we're looking to see some break for these young people, that we achieve their potential and so on. But we need that clarity, I think. And as you do that, then, you know, I'm not going to take a lot of time on this, but I love it. You know, a couple of other things which are dreadful is that you're always getting folk telling you how you can do better. You know, there's gangs, it's not so bad in Scotland, but in England there's gangs of consultants roaming the land with 57 different varieties of improvement. Everybody's got a silver bullet, you know, everybody's got a silver bullet. And you know, if I have to sit through another presentation on mindfulness, honestly, I'm going to open my veins. I'm seriously, I am, you know. And if anybody else tells me I need to have a growth mindset, I am going to punch them. You know, seriously. And all of these things seriously disturb me, because actually the reality is that most of us are doing the best that we can in the circumstances that we're in with the time and resources that we've got. Now, we need to improve, but we will not improve by adopting. We'll improve by adapting. That the meaningful change in progress, what Graham talked about, transformation rather than transaction, comes through adapting rather than adopting. And that, you know, the working smarter thing, right? You've been told to work smarter. Do you know what the correct response is when somebody tells you to work smarter? You just plant your feet really firmly on the ground. You reach out, grab the loose clothing in the upper part of their body. Just pull them sharply towards you and do that with your head. Because when somebody tells you to work smarter, they're basically telling you you're working pretty stupidly right now and it's time you grew up. And that's patronising, because I think you're working as smart as you can. And what I'm saying is, if we're serious about all of this, then we need to recognise where this is taking us. Because this is what we're getting just now. We're getting increased levels of cynicism. You know, Graham's list of questions that he would ban, right? Never ban a question. Always tackle the reason for asking it. You know, it's not enough to say, I'm going to ban the question, we tried this before and it didn't work. You need to address the reality of that question. Because maybe you did try it before and it didn't work. Cynicism is not always unjustified. But increasingly we've got people who've retreated into this Taliban of the head. You know, that they're in a cave, they won't kind of move forward. People are leaving the profession. People are working harder than they ever did. I mean, I just love you guys, because you're here on a Saturday. What is wrong with you? Do you know? But, I mean, people, as I said earlier, people I think are working harder probably than they ever did. And the level of professionalism that I see amongst teachers is unparalleled in my experience. You know, just, I'll come back to it shortly. But, you know, we've got all of that stuff, and you cannot work harder. There's absolutely no possibility of it. Worry more, you know, stress is the highest cause of absence. Loads of you neglecting other people and other things. One of my head teachers said to me, when I was working in Stirling, one of the heads said to me, David, do you know what I hate? And I said, is it me, Frank? And he said, apart from that, he said, I hate it when my kids say to me, Dad, will you come a minute? And I say, just hold on till I finish this. And they say, if I was a pupil at St Modens, you'd come quick enough. You know, how many of you have been so caught up with the joy of marking that you've told your partner you'd be up in a minute? And never were. Right? You know, so you've got all of that stuff going on. People suffering from stress, people self-medicating through alcohol. I mean, there are actually people in this group I know who have said, I don't normally on a school night, but it's been a hell of a day, before quaffing a flagon of wine. And we've got all of that stuff going on. And we've also, I think, needing to recognise that we've also got lots of things which would help us address workload. And here's a bunch of things that, some of which you can do something about, some of which you can't. Anybody remember the reduced building the curriculum series? Every single one of the building curriculum documents was reduced to a pamphlet of less than 2,000 words. Never see them now. Nobody's talking about them. And the whole idea of producing these shortened documents was to try and get the message across to people that we were not demanding a massive change in practice. Because teachers just look your teachers, I know I'm talking to you in the third person, but you look at big booklets and stuff and you think, bloody hell, there must be something far wrong with what I'm doing if it takes all this to fix it. So psychologically, these reduced documents were a good idea. The one that was never done, the one that was never released, was Building the Curriculum 4. And Building the Curriculum 4 is the skills document. If they redid the skills document, Building the Curriculum 4, they could create a set of learning pathways and we could have conversations around what a good one looked like in each of these pathways. And actually, some of that work was done by the Excellence Group. There was an Excellence Group, I think about 4 years ago, produced a report on higher order skills. There's a toolkit to support the higher order skills working party staff. As far as I'm aware, nobody ever looks at it. And the point that I'm making around lots of this is they were too busy drowning to reach for the life belts. So there's actually quite a bit of stuff that's around that's helpful. I did a review of devolved school management and Scottish Government's never picked it up or implemented. Now, I'm not arguing that because I wrote it, they should. But what I'm saying is, why are we doing a governance review? You know, why don't we just go back and say, did that DSM review get it right? Instead of causing all the upheaval and trial that will go through around it. And the answer to raising attainment, in terms of Chris and the discussions you've been having this afternoon, are within new community schools in GIRFEC. Now, GIRFEC still gets mentioned, but does it get mentioned as much as raising attainment? And that's what we need to reverse. You know, if we're going to get into that workload issue, because what you're going to finish up doing is you're going to finish up chasing the fade and all of that stuff. And do you know what? There's the optimism of practice. I'm optimistic because you're here and it's Saturday. You know, that makes me optimistic that there's over 100 people have turned up on a Saturday to learn more about pedagogy. Do you know, it did you so much honour as a group the way you responded to Chris. I mean, I was so, so touched and impressed. You know, people clapping, you know, in between things, all of that stuff, just that general warmth, that clear, palpable joining in was just wonderful. And that gives me enormous hope. And I would rather that we worked with that optimism, because you're hearing it Saturday. In addition to that, STEP in itself, I think, is grounds for optimism, that we've got an organisation, Scottish Teachers Enhancing Practice, which is trying to focus on what will actually make a difference, and is also looking at having Chris here speaking about care. We've also got TeachMeets, Pedagoos, we've got Practitioner Inquiry, we've got organisations like Tapestry, we've got local authorities investing in visible learning. There's an awful lot of stuff going on that we should be building on. If we want to make successful change, you need two things. You need traction and you need momentum. Traction being grip on the ground. So you need always to start from where you are and move forward. An interesting approach to workload from when SCEL, Scottish Education Leadership, their work in teacher agency, Fergal Kelly's work, is absolutely world class, I think. But one of the schools I'm working with just now, I said to the head teacher, I said, what are you doing for your school improvement plan? And she said to me, I've just told all the teachers to pick something they're good at and tell me how they're going to take it forward. Think about that for a minute, right? In terms of a workload issue. Pick something we're good at and tell me how you're going to take it forward. That's real traction, isn't it? Now, I'm not arguing that that's the right way to go, but what I see her getting in her school is collateral improvement. They're not always chasing the failure, which is what we tend to do around raising attainment. That's partly what creates the workload. We look at the data, we say, what are we doing worst? And then we focus all our energies on that. And we get into this vortex where we're trying to do remedial work on ourselves. You with me? And there's lots of things I think we need to think about around that. So lots of stuff there that we can draw on. And here's what I think we need to do, and this is me trying to get into stuff that we can control at our own hands. Right. We need, first of all, to agree what matters. There needs to be a conversation within schools, between teachers, and there needs to be a conversation, which Education Scotland are part of, about what actually matters in terms of raising attainment. Because the starting theme of today is, we've been very good at making change, but very poor at making a difference. So what are the things that make a difference? And you heard some of them from Chris, and you heard some of them from Graham. We need to get a focus on that. But desperately, we actually need to have a focus on the breakable plates, because you're spinning so many plates that some of them are bound to drop anyway. So what we need to do is we need to identify what the breakable plates are. And here's a tool you can use. Look, this is brilliant. I say it's brilliant because I mean, you just need one of these. You just need one of these graphs. And on the graph, time and effort, and the other line on the bottom is impact. Okay? If anybody wants one of these wonderful resources to take away with them, you're more than welcome to have them. I don't really want to take them home. And what you do with them, and this would have been the workshop part of this, is you sit down with post-its and you get your staff or yourself or your colleagues, whatever your relationship is, you get them to pick an area. Let's say, for the sake of argument, it's marking and assessment. Right? Massive, massive issue for lots of teachers at all stages. And what you do is you talk through what are the things that you do in marking and assessment, and you write them down in post-its. And then you put the post-its onto that graph where you think they fit best. Now, what first thing that you get out of that is you get teachers having a conversation with each other about real practice. You get teachers having a conversation with each other about impact in a context in which they're not being judged. You with me? It's not a case of I need to talk to you about your marking or your assessment because I might have concerns about it. It's teachers sitting down on an equal basis saying these are the things that we do. You're then getting teachers, people in the same context, talking to each other about what they think has an impact. So what you're also doing is you're building a culture of reflection. And then what you get is once you stick the post-its onto the graph, you've got a clear picture of workload. And what you then do is you then go back to the graph and you decide which post-its are coming off. You with me? And it's a really straightforward, simple exercise that you can do. But at the end of it, what you'll see is you'll see some breakable plates coming off. You can do it with interventions. Graham talked this morning about the Education Endowment Fund interventions. Why don't we write them down in post-its and then have a conversation with each other? What do we do in our school around feedback? Write it down in post-its, put it in the graph. Suddenly you've got teachers talking to each other, which is where real progress comes from. And actually, at the end of the exercise, not only have you learned, not only have you gained, not only are you clearer about what you're doing, but you've actually reduced your workload. Are you with me? And it's a straightforward and practical way in which you can get into it. And you are also exercising this. Every school, for me, now needs to use these three principles in terms of planning. So if you're a middle leader in a school, or it's a request you should be making of your schools, first principle should always be manageability. What will this change mean in terms of practice? Because quite often just now, what we do is we think something's a brilliant idea and we implement it, and it's only when we implement it that suddenly we realise that it's got massive workload implications. So, you know, a classic thing would be iPads. But iPads, brilliant! You know, we'll have iPads on the ceiling, we'll have iPads on the floor of the floors, we'll all be playing with iPads. The children will walk on iPads, we'll move apps with their feet, and it will be fantastic, and everything will be wonderful. And then suddenly somebody realises that the forward plans that they've been recycling for the last 5 years just won't cut it anymore because they've got a linoleum full of iPads. And then suddenly the good idea becomes a workload issue. If you want a really extreme example of it, it's exactly what happened with Curriculum for Excellence. Loads of folk went, oh, Curriculum for Excellence, hunky-dory, I'm all for that Curriculum for Excellence. 4 capacity, love the 4 capacity, love all that, love that washing machine diagram, just adore it, it's all fantastic. God almighty, is this what we have to do? Right, it was when the exams came in that everybody suddenly stopped saying that Curriculum for Excellence was all right in principle. And I'm like, this is crap. Right, and there was that sudden movement because it had never been thought through to the point of manageability. So, are you with me? So we need to demand that. And the second filter we need to have is coherence. Because I think what hacks people off is painting on a wet wall. And that's what we do all the time. Somebody comes along and says, you know, brilliant, brilliant. Feedback. Now, I believe in feedback, but say feedback, you know, and everybody's like, oh, wow, let's get the feedback paint up on the wall. That's fine. That's great. And before the feedback paint's dry, they come along and say, I don't know about that feedback stuff. I think if we did Chinese maths, I think that might make more difference to the thing. All right, Chinese maths. So you finish up painting away. Well, that's why we've had lots of change and no difference. Because if you keep painting on a wet wall and never allow things to become absorbed into practice, you don't get coherent development. And what you get is reinforced cynicism. And then the third thing is consonance. And the key idea about consonance is that anything that you're talking about doing, you need to start from the inside out. You won't change your practice. According to OECD research, 85% of teachers have a default position of no to any new innovation or development unless it can be conclusively demonstrated to them that it will benefit their students or benefit them in some way. 85% view new ideas with suspicion, right? Because most people didn't come into teaching because their first choice career occupation as a trapeze artist fell through. You know, most of us are fairly, we're conservative, we're worried about failing, we're worried about not getting it right. We've generally got an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, I think. So all of these things combined. So if you want to make people change, you've got to start from the inside and then look out. Okay? And the last couple of things, this you can't read just now, but what I'll do is I'll make this presentation available and you'll be able to read it. Then this is what they've done in England around reducing teacher workload, and some of it's a bit pious as well, some of it's a bit like the statements we made, but what I think is interesting about it is they've got a list of do's, they've got a list of don'ts, and then they've got a list of remember Ofsted says. And what I think we should be doing is we should be trying to do the same thing in Scotland, so that we look at what do we need to do, what do we need to stop doing, and what do the inspectors say about it. Because what often drives us is the fear that we'll be judged externally. You with me? Right. So again, I think you'll get this, and it's been subscribed to by all the teachers' unions as well. It's been signed up to by Ofsted. How powerful would that be if instead of getting, I mean, the statement that Bill Maxwell made about workload, do you remember that? Anybody, I don't know if anybody read it. It uses the word delivery or deliver over 64 times in the document. It's like your milkman. Do you know? It's this whole concept of delivery. It's not helpful. What we need is we need joint statements coming out from the unions and Education Scotland, because I think that would give us confidence. But you'll get that in the pack. You can have a look at that, see what you make of it. I'm going to finish up very quickly now with this because I'm already over time. But the reason why I show you this is it comes from my favourite piece of research. And what they did in the research was they went into schools, they asked children and their young people, and they asked teachers who were the good and effective teachers. So all they did was they studied people with credibility with their peers and their students, and they were all different. Some of them were young, some of them were old, some of them were straight, some of them a bit less straight, all of that. So they then looked to see what were the things that they all did in common. In other words, what were the things that appeared to be really effective? And if you look at the list that's there, and again, if you get the presentation and look at what's there on that list, the most striking thing about it is there's nothing striking about it. And what I'm trying to get across, if we're going to deal with workload, one of the things that we need to do is recognise that continuing to do some of the things that are not in the least innovative are actually the things that are going to make a significant difference in terms of raising attainment. Right? And these were the seven things that came out. And if anybody wants it, I produced a self-evaluation form based on that, which allows you to focus on what matters. If these are the things that matter in terms of practice, then you do the self-evaluation. And these are the four questions. And just again, finishing up on this, when I'm trying to do work in schools around school improvement or pupil improvement, these are the questions I ask. I don't start with the data. Start with the practice. And I think it's important to do that because all of the research says it's what happens when educators and learners come together that makes a difference to students' attainment. So we mustn't start from anywhere else. Second thing that's important, I'm asking you what you think you can do. You with me? Right? So you're starting from a position of belief rather than a requirement. Second question, I could go into at length, but the main point of having that question is it makes school improvement a discussion about we and not a discussion about you. Standard model for school improvement just now is look at the data, see where we're going wrong, tell you to fix it. Now that's the standard model. Data, your responsibility, you fix it, do better. See it time and time again in schools where people go in and get told what they need to do to improve. So anything that transfers that to we and to try and look at how you can get help and support, hugely important for workload. And the third question is about letting you set the targets. I think even if we look at the data, whether it's national testing data to come or national data, higher data, whatever, I think even if we start from the data and we look at the gap, I think you still feel the targets being imposed. And I think that idea of getting you to identify the improvements you think you can make by changing your practice, that actually will give you some energy and commitment. The job of the school leader is to make sure that that will also help to address what the overall school data issues are. And the last thing I want to say about this, which I think is incredibly important about workload, is that the school's not the unit for improvement. There are very few schools that need to improve. There are some teachers that do. And in any school that I go into, there are good teachers. And yet, a school improvement plan suggests that everyone needs to improve. Now, what we need to do is we need to get away from that, and we need to get some recognition that some people could improve, but it's not life-threatening if they don't, because they are already excellent professionals. And creating that culture where good is good enough, and then the evidence bit, and all of that fits exactly with the inspectorate model. You with me? I'm sorry, that's been a right rush, but just, if you want the presentation, and I don't know why the sound's not working, that's who I am. That's me burning to death in the cell of Joan of Arc. That's my email address. If you want the presentation and the self-evaluation form, drop me an email. I will send it directly out to you. If you've not had enough of my ravens, that's my Twitter tag. And if you are seriously interested, that's my mobile number. So that's all, folks. That's your workshop. If anybody wants one of these wonderful resources, these graphs, please help yourself on the way out. And in the meantime, let's get back and close the conference. Is that okay? Thank you.